And on there, you can RSVP, and you can contact the leaders of that rally. You can.
This is Cecilia Katchik, the former state senator who represented Greene County. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Max Hamill of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper on details of the September 17th meeting of the Hudson Board of Education, including news on high school electives, the district's declining enrollment, and the first week of school. During a curriculum workshop, the board heard members of the high school faculty discuss available elective courses as well as college courses made available for students under the auspices of SUNY Cobleskill. Some of the courses allow students to earn both high school and college credit. Outgoing Hudson High School principal Antonio Tini Abitable reported that enrollment at the high school is the lowest it has ever been. He said, and I quote, "You can feel it. There is a noticeable difference in the hallways and cafeteria," end quote. Abitable said class schedules are running well, but, and I quote, "maybe that's because we have so few students," end quote. Montgomery C. Smith Elementary School principal Mark Burnerman reported his school had a, and I quote, "much smoother opening than last year," end quote, despite the presence of, and I quote, "a lot of new staff," end quote. The curriculum this year focuses on science, and the Breakfast with Dad program was a big success, he said. Read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Stephen Williams reports in the Daily Gazette that the seatbelt system in the limousine that crashed in Schoharie last year, killing 20 people, was partially to blame, the National Transportation Safety Board said in a report released October 2nd. quote, the passenger seatbelt systems in the Schoharie crash limousine were poorly designed. It would not have provided adequate protection, unquote, the NTSB stated about the October 6, 2018 accident at the intersection of State Routes 30 and 30A in Schoharie. Quote, the Schoharie crash shows that a comprehensive solution is required to address the multiple occupant protection problems associated with seating systems in limousines that have been modified from other types of vehicles, unquote. U.S. Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat who represents the area, said, quote, today's preliminary findings by the NTSB confirm that many of us have long believed that 20 souls lost to this tragedy were victims of a profoundly broken system that failed to establish or uphold even the most basic safety standards. Making matters worse, these findings show in heartbreaking fashion that incidents like this will continue to happen until we deal with America's broken limousine safety standards and respond with clear, enforceable standards, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette.
David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. The backlash against the decision by Rensselaer County officials to exclude the city of Troy as the site for early voting now includes a legislative response from Senator Neil Breslin. The Bethlehem Democrat who represents Troy has put forward legislation requiring counties to place at least one early voting site in the most heavily populated municipality within their borders. Troy, which has nearly 27,000 voters, will not have a polling site for early voting, while Brunswick and Skodak, with less than 10,000 registered voters apiece, are serving as early voting sites. In Schenectady and Albany counties, the largest city will have early voting sites. The legislation could not be enacted in time for elections this year, but it could be passed next year in time for the 2020 races. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Kerry Pickett reports for the Washington Examiner that Representative Antonio Delgado is largely mimicking what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying about impeaching the president. On September 27th, Pelosi said, quote, this is a sad time for our country, unquote. And October 2nd, at a town hall meeting in Rhinebeck, Delgado said, quote, this is sad. It's a sad moment in this country's history, unquote. Previously, Pelosi had written about, quote, a grave new chapter of lawlessness, unquote, while Delgado, a Democrat representing the 19th Congressional District, said, quote, we are literally about to embark on something that does not happen all that often in our country's history. It's a grave, serious environment that we're in, unquote. Both are mirroring Democratic talking points on the issue, but Delgado claims what he says are not talking points. Quote, it's not a talking point. I prefer you not to call it a talking point. You're attributing words to me, unquote, Delgado said. Quote, I've used a host of different words. I've used sad, I've used sober, I've used serious, unquote. Read more about this story at the Washington Examiner.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Dutchess County Conservative Committee has elected Fishkill resident Donald Minichino as its new chairperson. He takes over for Maureen Natrella, who did not seek re-election. A outspoken community activist and longtime member of the committee, Minichino plans to form a regional alliance with conservative leaders. He said, and I quote, one of my goals is to reach out to leaders in Orange and Ulster counties. We have some assembly districts and congressional districts that cross the lines, and we are going to pool our thoughts together and see what we can do as a co-op, end quote. The 19th Congressional District, currently represented by Democrat Antonio Delgado, includes portions of Dutchess and 11 other counties. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that Hudson's Common Council heard a first presentation about the possibility of moving city offices into the former John L. Edwards Elementary School at a meeting September 30th at the Hudson Library. The school is empty and up for sale for $3.9 million. City officials say they could sell several buildings that could be used for businesses or housing and consolidate services in the large school in the center of town. The building is large enough to host most city services, perhaps a daycare or makerspace or apprentice classes, too. Architects at Lacey Thaler Reeler Wilson will be back before the Common Council at its October 15th meeting. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Janet T. Mulder
is reporting for Syracuse.com, state officials are warning consumers to stay away from health insurance policies being marketed as Trump care plans. Linda A. Lacewell, the state's financial service superintendent on October 2nd, said, and I quote, "We know that so-called Trump care, or however else these short-term plans are marketed, is nothing more than a ploy to convince Americans to buy junk insurance," end quote. Lacewell is responding to reports that the county is being flooded with health insurance plans that fail to provide meaningful coverage. The Trump administration recently changed a provision in the Federal Affordable Care Act to allow insurers to sell plans with terms as short as 3 months. Lacewell said the sale of short-term health insurance plans is illegal in New York, regardless of the changes in federal regulations. Any New York resident who may have purchased these plans is advised to file complaints online with the State Financial Services Department or to call its Consumer Assistance Hotline at 800-342-3736. And you can read the full story at Syracuse.com.
The latest New York State foliage report is out, and leaves in our area are now near peak color. Quote, in the Catskills, foliage will be at peak this weekend in Delaware County. Look for 78 to 80% color change and bright gold and red leaves. The mountains of Greene County will showcase a mix of near peak to peak foliage this weekend with some peak leaves and about 80% color change above 2,000 feet. Look for bright touches of red, orange, yellow, and green. Observers reporting from the town of Catskill expect foliage will be about 50% change and at midpoint by the weekend with vibrant reds and oranges and yellows along with a hint of purple. Surrounding valley towns should be about 65% changed. At Bel Air Mountain in the Ulster County community of High Mount, foliage will be at midpoint of change by the weekend with 55% color transition and bright orange and red leaves. In Kingston, look for just 20% change with increasing amounts of yellow, orange, red, and burgundy leaves.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, showers are likely mainly between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m., then rain after 2 p.m. with a temperature high near 52 degrees. More rain Thursday night, mainly before 5 a.m. with a temperature low of around 50 degrees. And on Friday, a chance of rain before 8 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 56 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear with a low of around 35. So there you have your weather update. Brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXC program schedule during the coming week. On Thursday, October 3rd, WGXC Live will carry a live web stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill of an evening curated by the Workers Unite Film Festival, featuring a tribute to local artist Bruce Anderson and performances from Brooklyn-based Color Collage, Catskill's Gary's Dream, and Palinville's Potted Plant, plus a screening of Final Cuts. The webcast begins at 7 p.m. at wgxc.org/listen and is also on 90.7 FM after 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., when it will continue as a webcast at wgxc.org/listen.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at wgxc.org, including some of these events.
On Thursday, October 3rd, in collaboration with the City of Hudson Senior Center and the Hudson Area Library, this class will focus on discovering the power of the inner self through the practice of daily writing. Taught by author, artist, educator, and social activist Maureen McNeil. Registration is limited at programs at hudsonarealibrary.org and is on a first-come, first-served basis. An evening curated by the Workers Unite Film Festival, featuring a tribute to local artist Bruce Anderson and a performance from Brooklyn-based Color Collage, Catskill's Gary's Dream, and Palinville's Potted Plant, and a screening of Final Cuts at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 7 to 11 p.m. with live web stream on WGXC.org. Les Filles de Il Giadad from Niger perform, led by Fatou Sidi Gali, at the Half Moon in Hudson at 8 p.m.
Hi, I'm Carol from Athens, New York. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Shimidis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stella Yoon of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I'm a student at Montgomery C. Smith. I'm also from Hudson.
Yay!
Yay!
And we're so excited to have Lena joining us this week, a new member of Bound by Books.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yay.
Quiet mic clapping. But we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
Mm-hmm.
All
bookworms.
That. Bookworms. Yeah, we haven't talked about bookworms yet.
No, we haven't, actually.
Would you like to talk about bookworms?
Yes.
Do you know anything about bookworms?
Yes, they always read books and they have glasses or no glasses on.
Scientifically proven.
I mean, I should wear glasses, but I don't.
Wait, why don't you wear glasses ever?
Because I'm always scared I'm going to lose them.
Contacts?
No, I can't put things near my eyes.
Terrifying.
Oh, I'm scared.
I wear sunglasses sometimes.
Yeah.
But not prescription ones. But I am a bookworm.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a worm.
That'd be a bit strange.
Fun fact. But yeah, so we're going to talk about some books today, because that's what we do. Maybe we'll start with Lena, since she's new to us.
Oh, no, you guys can see
Well, what kind of books do you like?
I like comic books, or the books kind of like dork diaries.
Mm-hmm. So with some kind of pictures in them, at least, even if not a comic
book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like ones where they get right to the chase, or they're like, oh, and this is Chloe and Zoe, and they stuck up for me. Yeah. And ones with drama. Mm-hmm. But currently right now I'm reading Share Your Smile. You get to write and draw in this book, and it'll like show little parts of the scenes, and it'll explain like, step one, blah, blah, blah. But my favorite part is step 8, the cover, because you get to see the covers, that the ideas of the covers for Smile.
Mm-hmm. I remember Smile.
Oh,
I don't.
Yeah.
I prefer drama.
Amelia
exponentially
is
to Smile.
Horrified by the teeth.
I'm not a teeth person. Smile freaked me out. Smile freaks me out still. I can't.
I prefer Sisters because it's relatable with me and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw her new book called Guts.
Oh yeah, that one just came out.
I think I'd still prefer that one to Smile.
We were just talking about Smile on the show recently and how idea of dentistry and dental pain is not fun to read about. Although I loved Smile, so I'm not with Amelia on that one.
Mm.
But I did love drama.
To probably be kind of like Raina, I think is how you pronounce her name.
Yeah, Raina Telgemeier.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was Telgemeier.
Close.
Yeah.
And you've read a bunch of Raina Telgemeier, right?
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite of all of her books that you've read? The current
share
one?
Share Your Smile, because you need to share it.
So you like the message of the book?
Yeah.
That's cool that it's like a little workbook.
Yeah.
So it's probably not one you would borrow from a library, because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, that'd be a bit redundant.
Yeah. It could be fun if people just did select stuff in it, and so it was a shared book that had, like, somebody filled out this page and someone filled out that page.
Huh. Or they could be like, hey kids, come over here and write your name, and we'll
a signature book. I want, like, a signature book. I saw one of those at a concert once for a tribute band.
Oh, that's cool.
That you could write your signature in there.
Yeah.
I have a signature backpack from the Harlem Wizards basketball game.
Awesome. What books did you bring, Amelia?
I finished Fallout literally today.
Mm-hmm.
And
did it hold up?
Kinda. I mean, I'm afraid if it had gone on any longer, it probably just would have made me really, really depressed. But it ended relatively happily. It still holds up because it was like interesting with the point of view switching between after the bomb drop and before the bomb drop.
Yeah, so to catch our listeners and Lena up, the book is set in the
60s. 1962.
And the family of the main character has a fallout shelter underground, and that there's part of the book they're building that fallout shelter, and then part of it is after a bomb has dropped and they're living in the fallout shelter.
Yeah.
And I just learned last week on the show that the lights have gone out in the fallout shelter, and that's terrifying to me.
Wait, like in real life?
Well, it's a made-up story.
It's set during the Cold War when the Russians and the U.S. both had atomic bombs. And this takes place in a reality where those bombs are actually dropped instead of, like, a general ceasefire happening between the two countries.
What's a ceasefire?
Come on, AP US History knowledge, come back to me. I don't even know if that's the right word.
That makes sense. It's
basically, they agreed that, if we actually drop these bombs, things are going to get wrecked all over, so let's not do that and just kind of chill.
So, like, it was Americans versus Russia?
It could have almost been considered World War III if, like, it had actually gone down.
Oh, no.
And this takes place in, you know, a world where that did happen and the bombs were dropped.
Oh.
And then I'm also reading, for school, I've started reading A Thousand Splendid Sons by Khaled Hosseini. Who also wrote The Kite Runner, which I haven't ever read, but I'm reading this currently, which is very interesting.
Yeah. Both of those books are very popular.
And I'm actually reading ahead in it, which I'm not really supposed to do when it's a school book, but, you know, it's really good.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
I guess there's worse things you could do than read ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to be that one person in high school who just reads the whole entire book at night, like, for the whole entire night, because I finish my books really fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to hearing about that one.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting so far.
I finished a book over the weekend. I'd been reading, and I've talked about it a little bit on the show before, Pan's Labyrinth, The Labyrinth of the Faun by Guillermo del Toro and Cornelia Funke, or it might be Funky.
Funky?
I forget. When I was listening to the audiobook at one point, and they pronounced it differently than I've always pronounced it, and I can't remember how they pronounced it. But I've always known it as Funke, but I think that might not be right. Although audiobook readers sometimes get names wrong, so we'll see. But it's based on a movie from 2006 called Pan's Labyrinth, which was a sort of fairy tale horror drama film. And this is it's a YA adaptation of the movie. And it's pretty true to the movie, although it adds elements. And I think the fairy tale aspect is really strong in the book. It's strong in the movie too, but the book sort of develops some of the fantasy world a little bit more through little stories that it inserts throughout the book. So especially if you liked the movie, some of the characters that you meet that you don't really learn much about, you get like added content on their backstory.
So, like, basically what he thought, like, about them, and after the movie, like...
Like, I don't think it's a continuation. I think it's just a novel version.
Yeah, so it's a novel version of the movie, but it adds some to it.
I've never seen Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah,
but my dad does have the movie.
I know there are some pretty dark moments in the movie that I remembered because they... You know, sometimes those moments stick with you the most. And so I recently realized that the movie is also rated R. So probably.
Oh, I wasn't aware. I actually wasn't aware of that.
And the book does have dark moments as well. It doesn't, you know, shy away from those. But I think somehow it's a little different reading it than watching it. But I think it holds up. I think both are very strong. I actually rewatched the movie last night. I finished the book and then I rewatched the movie. Because I hadn't seen it since 2006, and both are very strong. Like, I wouldn't suggest necessarily one over the other or which order to read them in. But if you saw the movie years ago like I did and want to sort of dive into it again, I highly suggest the book.
Guillermo del Toro does some really, really good and creepy work, and whether it's, like, a fantastical movie or a horror movie. Like, most recently, I think he worked on... the movie adaptation of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which I gush about a lot, which was very, very strong and good for a PG-13 horror movie. It was very well done.
Yeah,
I want to see that movie because my sister read the book. Mm-hmm. You know, so I want to see that part in the movie where little Jimmy, or I can't remember his name, went to, like, I'm not going to give any spoilers, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about it. But little Jimmy does something.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember a character named Jimmy.
But
so
maybe
I...
it was somebody. Maybe the name changed.
Maybe.
I'll have to save. They didn't put all the stories in.
Oh, no, they didn't. They put in four. They put in Harold, the Big Toe, the Red Spot, and I don't remember what this one was called, but the one with the Pale Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Room, that the Pale Woman in the Red Room was the one that I remembered.
Well, speaking of the Pale Woman,
and actually,
the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth was in there. That's the creepy guy that you know of from
previous.
Oh,
the one with the eyes on his palms.
Yeah. Oh, and one thing I didn't mention is this book is illustrated. So it's not a it's not a picture book, it's not a graphic novel, but it has kind of like how some chapter books have occasional really beautiful pictures in them.
Ooh.
It has that. So that was really fun because I started reading the book and then I had a road trip this weekend. So I listened to the rest of it. So before I returned the book to the library, I peeked at all the pictures because I didn't want to miss out on that. And the pictures are really beautiful. They're in black and white.
Huh.
And very good. And it includes the Pale Man. But yeah, so the story's set in Spain right after the Civil War. And there's those that were defeated. There's some rebels living up in the woods. And the main character is a young girl who's moved to the woods with her mother, who's pregnant, and her stepfather, who is a captain, who is off to seek out the rebels and get rid of them. And he's not a good man. And she is, so she's living there in the woods with her mother and new stepfather and the other people that are part of that sort of brigade. And one night she follows a fairy out into a labyrinth and down into a well, and she encounters a faun who tells her that she's the long lost Princess Moana, and that...
Wait, Moana?
Yeah, not the one from
this
Disney.
This was made before Moana's Disney.
Oh, she's okay. She's a princess from long ago who had died, but her soul has returned to Earth, and if she wants to join her family in the kingdom underground, that she has three tasks that she has to do. And so she's going on these adventures trying to complete these three tasks while her mother is not well. She's pregnant, but her health is not strong. And so she's trying to survive and give birth to the baby brother. And then Captain Vidal, her stepfather, is trying to hunt down the rebels in the woods. And then there's a person that works for the captain who is connected with the rebels and is trying to help them secretly.
What's a faun?
It's like part...
What's the one's name in Narnia?
And part human?
What's that one's name in Narnia?
Or ram and human, I can't remember.
It's like...
But it's like a part horned and hooved
it's
animal.
It's like a satyr.
Oh, and part human.
Yeah.
True story. Except not true story, because they're not real.
Yeah.
Except in my books.
Sad.
But yeah, so it's a pretty dark story, but it's also really sort of magical and beautiful.
It's kind of like Labyrinth, which has some weird moments in it, too.
I'd say it's darker than Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely darker than Labyrinth. Labyrinth has David Bowie in a glam rock section of it, which is strange but very fun.
Yeah. But moving on from that dark, dark fantasy fairy tale to some light fare. So I'm currently reading Best Friends by Shannon Hale and Liyuan Pham, and it's a comic book, graphic novel. And it's a follow-up to Real Friends, which was the first book in the series that was very good. Have you read Real Friends?
Yeah, I have that at my house, and I didn't know that she was going to make, like, a sequel to it.
Yeah. So this is the next one. So now she's in sixth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's entering sixth grade, and so now she's at that's, like, the top grade in the school. So now they're, like...
Queens?
Yeah, they're the queens of the school now.
Yeah.
And so it's further exploring her friendships with her crew of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun. I mean, it's also a little, it kind of reminds you of some of the not as great times from middle school.
Yeah.
You know, when people aren't always nice, even then they're friends. And so that's interesting, but it still manages to be very light.
Yeah.
You will probably want to read this one.
I was actually sitting in the book section and reading it in Walmart.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I still have books from the book fair I have to read. I'm sorry, I just very suddenly realized that. And now, because I finished Fallout, I can, like, grab another one of those. Because Fallout was a book fair book.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished it, and I felt so accomplished. I'm like, man,
yes.
I've actually finished a book from the book fair in the same year that I've gotten it. And then I remembered all the other ones I have. And I was like, oh, no, there's so much more. I think I might read Starcrossed next, but I don't remember what author that was from.
Is that Barbara D?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think that's...
Possibly.
I could be wrong. Look it up. Okay, so I think now we're going to move on to sharing some books that are coming out that we think sound really great. I'll start off with one called 13 Doorways, Wolves Behind Them All by Laura Ruby, who is the author of Bone Gap, which we read for Battle of the Books 3 years ago, I think, 2 years ago. And here's the description. When Frankie's mother died and her father left her and her siblings at an orphanage in Chicago, it was supposed to be only temporary, just long enough for him to get back on his feet and be able to provide for them once again. That's why Frankie's not prepared for the day that he arrives for his weekend visit with a new woman on his arm and out-of-state train tickets in his pocket. Now Frankie and her sister Toni are abandoned alongside so many other orphans, two young, unwanted women doing everything they can to survive. And as the embers of the Great Depression are kindled into the fires of World War II, and the shadows of injustice, poverty, and death walk the streets in broad daylight, it will be up to Frankie to find something worth holding on to in the ruins of this shattered America. Every minute of every day spent wondering if the life she's able to carve out will be enough. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little note that says, I will admit I do not know the answer, but I will be watching, waiting to find out. That's what ghosts do. I'm not really sure what that means.
It's ominous a bit.
Yeah.
And this was a, this book was not long-listed for the National Book Award for this year. Ooh. So whether it will make the short list, I don't know yet. But that's 13 Doorways, Wolves Behind Them All by Laura Ruby.
I just noticed that this thing by Marie Lu is a Batman story, and all my dreams are coming true right now.
Yay! Success.
It's Batman Nightwalker, DC Icons number 2 by Marie Lu. Before he was Batman, he was Bruce Wayne, a reckless boy willing to break the rules for a girl who may be his worst enemy. The Nightwalkers are terrorizing Gotham City, and Bruce Wayne is next on their list. One by one, the city's elites are being executed as their mansion's security systems turn against them, trapping them like prey. Meanwhile, Bruce is turning 18 and about to inherit his family's fortune, not to mention the keys to the Wayne Enterprises and all the tech gadgetry his heart could ever desire. But after a run-in with the police, he's forced to do community service at Arkham Asylum, the infamous prison that holds the city's most brutal criminals. Madeline Wallace is a brilliant killer and Bruce's only hope. In Arkham, Bruce meets Madeline, a brilliant girl with ties to the Nightwalkers. What is she hiding, and why will she speak only to Bruce? Madeline is the mystery Bruce must unravel, but is he getting her to divulge her secrets, or is he feeding her the information she needs to bring Gotham City to its knees? Bruce will walk the dark line between trust and betrayal as the Nightwalkers circle closer.
That's really cool. And yeah. You know, it says number 2, so I might have to read number 1 first, but I'm really excited.
I wonder if it's, because it's DC Icons number 2, I wonder if DC Icons number 1 was a different character.
Maybe.
Because yeah. There have been some other graphic novels coming out recently that are from DC that their authors are major YA authors, huh? Young adult authors.
Ooh.
So maybe we'll have to see. You want to share one?
Sunny Rolls the Dice, Sunny Number 3 by Jennifer L. Holm and Matthew Holm. Too cool for school. For the least groovy girl in the grade. Sunny's just made it to middle school, and it's making her life very confusing. All her best friend, Deb, wants to talk about fashion, makeup, boys, and being cool. Sunny's not against any of these things, but she also doesn't understand why suddenly everything revolves around them. She's much more comfortable when she's in her basement playing Dungeons and Dragons, yes.
Yes.
With a bunch of new friends, because when you're sword fighting a spider slaying, it's hard to worry about whether you're going to look cool or not, especially when it's your turn to roll the 20-sided die.
Whoa.
Trying hard to be cool can make you feel really uncool. And it's much more fun to have fun.
True story.
I wish I could play Dungeons and Dragons.
Maybe you can.
I don't know how to play. My brother's never taught me.
Neither do I, but I've somehow been wrapped into a campaign at my school, so I guess I'm there now.
And there
hello.
Might be a Dungeons and Dragons club starting up at the library, so maybe,
ooh.
Maybe you could join that.
Can they teach me?
Yeah, that's the whole
thing. I'm going to make my brother join, so he has to teach me. He's going to only be here for special days and only on, what's it called? Summer?
What's like it called? The whole summer.
What a mood.
What is that called?
What's it called?
So next up, I have The Secret Commonwealth, The Book of Dust number 2 by Philip Pullman. So that's the second Book of Dust book, which is part of Philip Pullman's companion novels, I would call them, to his Dark Materials series. Hmm. And so Book of Dust number 1 takes place before that other trilogy, and then this one takes place after that trilogy.
Oh.
And here's the description. It is 20 years since the events of La Belle Sauvage, The Book of Dust, Volume 1, unfolded, and saw the baby, Lyra Belacqua, begin her life-changing journey. It is 7 years since readers left Lyra and the love of her young life, Will Perry, on a park bench in Oxford's Botanic Gardens at the end of the groundbreaking best-selling His Dark Materials sequence. Now, in The Secret Commonwealth, we meet Lyra Silvertongue, and she is no longer a child. The second volume of Sir Philip Pullman's The Book of Dust sees Lyra, now 20 years old, and her demon, Pantalaimon, forced to navigate their relationship in a way they could never have imagined, and drawn into the complex and dangerous factions of a world that they had no idea existed. Pulled along on his own journey, too, is Malcolm, once a boy with a boat and a mission to save a baby from the flood, now a man with a strong sense of duty and a desire to do what is right. Theirs is a world at once familiar and extraordinary, and they must travel far beyond the edges of Oxford, across Europe and into Asia, in search for what is lost. A city haunted by demons, a secret at the heart of a desert, and the mystery of the elusive dust.
Ooh. What was the original book called?
Well, there was The Golden Compass, The Subtle Knife, and The Amber Spyglass were the first three books. And then the Book of Dust series, the first one was called La Belle Sauvage.
Oh.
So the first three, I forget how old Lyra was in that, but she was a tween or a teen. And then the Book of Dust featured her as a baby, and now this one features her as an adult. So you get a little bit of her life through all this and all her adventures. So I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
Do you have another one?
Oh, yes, I do. Now entering Adamsville by Francesca Zappia, Nora Novak has been framed. When someone burns down the home of the school janitor and he dies in the blaze, everyone in Adamsville, Indiana, points the finger at Zora. Never mind that Zora has been on the straight and narrow since her father was thrown in jail. With everyone looking for evidence against her, her only choice is to uncover the identity of the real killer. There's only one problem. Zora has no leads. No one does. Adamsville has a history of tragedy, and 30 years ago, a similar string of fires left several townspeople dead. The arsonist was never caught. Now, Zora must team up with her cousin, Artemis, an annoying self-proclaimed Adamsville historian, to clear her name. But with a popular ghost-hunting television show riling up the townspeople, almost no support from her family and friends, and rumors spinning out of control, things aren't looking good. Zora will have to read between the lines of Adamsville ghost stories before she becomes one herself.
Ooh. That sounds good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Now everyone makes me want to sing Spooky Scary Skeleton now. Yeah. The Dark Lord Clementine by Sarah Jean Horwitz. A new face of big evil is a little small. Dastardly deeds aren't exactly the first things that come in mind when one hears Clementine. But as the sole heir of the infamous Dark Lord Elithor, 12-year-old Clementine Morris has been groomed since birth to be the best, worst, evil overlord she can be. But everything changes the day the Lord Elithor is cursed by a mysterious rival. Now Clementine must not only search for a way to break the curse, but also take on a full responsibilities of the Dark Lord. As Clementine forms her first friendships, discovers more about her own magic than she ever dared to explore, and is called upon to break her father's code of good and evil, she starts to question the very life she's been fighting for. What if the Dark Lord Clementine doesn't want to be dark after all?
I love the Dark Lord Clementine.
I love that title. Oh my gosh.
So fun. Yeah, so those are a handful of books coming out this month.
Cool.
That sound very good. There's so many books coming out this month that I want to read. I don't know what to do. I guess I have to read them.
Yes.
It's the only thing to do. But if these sound interesting to you, be sure to check them out.
Yeah.
And we're out of time for today, but we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a good week. Happy reading.
Bye.
Happy reading.
Public News Service Daily Newscast for Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. I'm Eric Tegedov. House Democrats plan to subpoena the White House over documents related to the Ukraine investigation. And 7 in 10 Ohioans say climate change is impacting the U.S. The impeachment case against President Trump continues to embroil Washington, D.C. House Democrats threaten to subpoena the White House by Friday if officials do not comply with requests to obtain documents related to their investigation into the president and Ukraine. Chairman of the Oversight and Reform Committee, Representative Elijah Cummings, says the White House has ignored multiple requests for documents over the past several weeks. The ramped-up investigation sent Trump into a rage on Wednesday. At a press conference alongside the president of Finland, Trump lashed out at top Democratic representatives Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi, calling the impeachment inquiry a hoax. The president also used more explicit language in a tweet to describe the Democrats' investigation. As Ohioans sweat through record-high October temperatures this week, new polling suggests many people are connecting the dots between extreme weather and climate change. Mary Sherman reports.
The 2019 Ohio Health Issues poll, released by Interact for Health, found that 7 in 10 Ohio adults believe global warming is affecting the United States either somewhat or a great deal, and 6 in 10 said global warming is affecting their local community. These effects are becoming more apparent, according to Ryan Mooney Bullock with Green Umbrella, a Cincinnati-based organization working to increase environmental sustainability.
We've been having 90-degree weather in September and October this year. That is not normal for our region. Instead of having a 100-year storm every 100 years, we're getting many in one season. We had a bit of a drought this summer, but this spring and early summer was some of the wettest on record.
According to the EPA, high temperatures in the future are expected to result in reduced corn and soybean production in rural areas and increased public health issues in urban communities.
The peace and quiet of the back roads in many of Utah's national parks soon could be shattered by the roar of all-terrain vehicles.
Utah conservation groups say a recent memo from the National Park Service directed Utah park superintendents, starting in November, to allow the vehicles known as ATVs or UTVs to travel on the same access roads and back roads as cars, trucks, and SUVs. Neil Clark with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance says it's a very bad idea.
Just a terribly short-sighted decision from the administration. They're off-road vehicles. They're intended to be used off-road, and they're just completely contrary to the purpose of the parks and why people visit and cherish them.
The memo instructs the parks to follow a 2008 Utah law that allows the state's more than 200,000 licensed off-road vehicles to travel on state and county roads. The new rule only applies in parks in Utah, but conservationists fear the changes could eventually spread to other states.
That was Mark Richardson reporting. This is PNS. This weekend, homeowners in all 50 states are opening their homes to friends, neighbors, or anyone curious about adding solar energy to power their home. Eric Gladys has this report from Texas.
Texas ranks sixth nationally for total installed solar capacity, but most solar arrays are at utility scale, not on individual rooftops. Hannah Mitchell is Texas director of the nonprofit Solar United Neighbors, the group behind the tour. She says so far, more than 850 solar houses across the nation have signed on.
We're really excited to see about 75 homes participating in Texas. So this is a chance to see solar energy on a home in action in your state and in your town.
Texans can check out their neighbor's solar panels, the inverter and electric box, which is what captures and transmits the power from the sun and converts it into electricity. Mitchell says solar is one of the fastest growing segments of the clean energy industry, in part because costs have dropped far enough to make solar less expensive than older technologies.
A new poll finds 83% of Kentucky voters age 50 and older think drug companies have influence over their governor and state legislators.
The findings come as incumbent Republican Governor Matt Bevin and Democratic candidate Andy Beshear gear up for the first gubernatorial debate being held tonight in Paducah. Ohio County resident and retiree Charlotte Whitaker says she's feeling burdened by the ballooning cost of her medications.
And my doctor recently, when I was with her, she said, "How can I treat someone when I know they cannot afford the prescription they need to be on?"
According to the survey, nearly 9 out of 10 older Kentuckians say prescription drug companies are making too much profit, and almost as many say elected officials aren't doing enough to curb costs. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
And finally, 6 months after its reauthorization passed in the House of Representatives, the Violence Against Women Act remains untouched by the Senate. Advocates who protect women against domestic violence want to see it picked up again. Janelle Mose, head of CAUSE North Dakota, the state's domestic violence and sexual assault coalition, says the federal legislation signed into law 25 years ago meant protection orders in one state were valid across state lines, and people convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence could have their firearms removed. Mose says it gave police better tools as well.
It also provided substantial resources for law enforcement, so we could train law enforcement on the dynamics of domestic violence so they were understanding that, looking at pro-arrest policies, making sure they had the tools that they needed to keep victims safe when they're responding to those calls.
Mose says the bill also has helped advocates support victims, including establishing shelters. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grand. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia Paper. Hudson School Superintendent Maria Stuttermeyer provided the public with updates on the district's ongoing buildings and grounds work. 6 prefabricated dugouts will be installed, 2 at the varsity baseball field at Montgomery C. Smith, with the remaining 4 dugouts to be added to the fields located behind the junior-senior high school. Stuttermeyer confirmed that the walking track behind the M.C. Smith building will have an adjusted shape when complete and measure a quarter of a mile, just like the old one. Plans are also underway to construct a new permanent fence around the M.C. Smith baseball diamond. The new fence will be 6 feet high in some places, 4 feet in others. Stoudemire also said the high school weight room and athletic lockers are being upgraded. At MC Smith, the new sidewalks have been completed and the auditorium renovation is, and I quote, moving along, end quote. You can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Masara Makati is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Divide New York State Caucus, a group advocating for the breakup of New York into three separate regions, held multiple meetings over the summer. The meetings were held in an effort to gain needed support from local municipalities to move forward legislation and divide up the state. Under the plan, New York City would be its own autonomous region, Westchester, Long Island, and Rockland would make up their own region, and the rest of upstate would make up the third autonomous region. John Bergner, chairman of the caucus, said, and I quote, "To divide the state is basically economics. The overregulation of densely populated cities being spread statewide has killed the upstate economy," end quote. While the Divide New York State Caucus argues economics are the reason to split the state, other upstate legislators said it's more about culture. Republican Assembly Member Stephen Hawley said, and I quote, "Our constituents are so very different, our ways of living, our family values, our livelihoods. We need to open our eyes and think about the entire state of New York," end quote. Hawley pointed to examples of downstate overreach, such as gun control legislation, reproductive rights, and the Farm Labor Rights Act. Hawley said, and I quote, "I don't think it's a Republican-Democrat thing at all. I think it's citizens of the state. It depends what values they have and what businesses drive their economies." Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting less than a week after Rockland County officials declared the measles outbreak over, they announced October 2nd that an international traveler to the region has been confirmed to have the virus. The person visited Congregation Kaltura Viznitz in Muncie, potentially exposing residents to measles during a two-day period in September. Health officials announced that anyone who visited the congregation during the evening of September 20th and in the early afternoon of September 21st may have been put at risk. County Health Commissioner Dr. Patricia Schnabel-Rupert said, and I quote, "We continue to urge residents to check their immunization status and get vaccinated if they are unimmunized." Measles is one of the most contagious viruses on Earth. 90% of unvaccinated people exposed to the virus become infected. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. Officials have confirmed that Siena College, Hudson Valley Community College, and the College of St. Rose were vandalized with stickers associated with the white nationalist organization Patriot Front this weekend. Campus security at the three Capital Region colleges are working with law enforcement to identify at least two suspects who were caught on campus security cameras. A Colony police spokesperson said two white men who appeared to be in their 20s were viewed entering and leaving Siena in a black car late in the day on September 28th. St. Rose in Albany and Hudson Valley in Troy were among 100 colleges and universities named on social media by Patriot Front, which took credit for the stickers, sharing photos of its nationwide recruitment campaign on Twitter. Patriot Front split from the white supremacist movement Vanguard America in 2017. Its members marked their presence with flyers and stickers and have organized protests featuring racist and anti-Semitic messages. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.